Okay, maybe that's better. Yeah. Yeah, there, thank you, Sparky. Speaking of Sparky, if you want to jump into the real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, click on the tab, says chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in. You will be engaged in some rollicking good conversation. And you will be met there by Labor Man and Steve from Georgistan and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who is repeatedly telling me now to throw the third switch. The third switch has been thrown, but there is something called latency in the interweb tubes, which means that it actually, while all this happens at light speed, it takes a little time for all the bajillions of hops to take place between here, the White Rose server, and, you know, you. Wonderful, wonderful you. I should be getting confirmation that the program is going through just any damn minute now as soon as I throw. That was the second switch. It's the third. There's the third switch. Son of a gun. Of course, it won't mean anything to anybody listening to the, to the recording, because it just all sounds like it's happening, except I gave it all away. Okay, but we'll be there. Latency being latency, we'll be there in just in a minute. I promise. Maybe I should wait, and we'll all catch up. Okay, because see, the chat room is real time. There's a little bit of delay there on the stream. It just sort of we'll just wait and see how long that takes. Because that was about 30 seconds. Okay, I better get a message in there. It is, by the way, Friday on the front porch on the Horn. One of my favorite days of the week. Well, you know what my favorite days of the week are here? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Because that means I get to do this. We get to have this little conversation. Ah, thank you very kindly, Labor Man in the chat room. Lima Charlie now, Bob. Yeah, okay, great. Welcome to Internet Latency. So, at any rate, I love Monday through Friday. And Friday is particularly fun because that's when we fire up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, also moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, is still out of the space folding business, because it's kind of brutal and in the man cave, no one can hear you scream because the fan's really loud. So that's why there's no space folding going on right now. Yes. There we go. Love you too, Brother Deacon Asa. A simple message from Brother Deacon Asa. You're lice. Live. Actually, Brother Deacon Asa, it's you louse. I realize you're Canadoodlian, so it's down here in Merca, it's you louse. But I usually don't get that except from right-wingers and, you know, hardcore Green Party people. But anyway, that's what that is. It's about 4 minutes past the hour, and a gentle reminder, this here is what we call listener-supported radio. We find ourselves in a $400 fundraising hole ending the week. These are not fun things to be in, fundraising holes. A couple of announcements. One, I'm informed that, yes, I can continue the wild rice offer. If you want to kick in $60, we'll be happy to send you as a gift for your gift. It's a gift exchange. It's kind of, look up Kula Chain. Look up Kula Chain, KULA. It's a gift for a gift. And just, this is amazing stuff. This isn't, mercury-tainted rice or, corporate rice or No, this is the good berry. This is manumen, which grows wild on the in the estuaries of Lake Superior, and which is harvested by hand at this time every year, and something that I hope to witness someday, because I think it would be absolutely thrilling to just be in the canoe and see this happen. And know that I was in the middle of something that's been a central part of human existence for 10,000 years, perhaps, or more, maybe 12. But it's harvested the same way as it has been all these millennia, and processed by hand, and provided to me by my good friends in the Northwoods. And I love the idea of sharing it out so that you can have that on your table, especially in the feasting season to come, no matter what you're feasting over. Samhain, Thanksgiving, birthdays, anniversaries, day ends in Y feast. Those are really fun. Yeah. $60, £1, $100, £2, and I'll keep it open a little while if anybody else wants it, and we'll go from there. There's a lot of fun stuff you can do with it too. It's not really a rice, remember, it's a grass grain that grows. The prophecies of the people who lived there said that they were told to go until they found the place where food grew on water. And that would be wild rice. If you make a turkey and vegetable soup with wild rice, oh, it's delicious. Absolutely magnificent. Sauté some with some celery and onions. And a little bit of, if you're a meat eater, some bacon, a little bit of bacon grease in there, saute that up, brown it a little bit, and then put it in your rice steamer. Oh, yummy. Or just, maybe use a little olive oil or something. Or, I bet sesame oil would be really good. And then steam it up, and I mean. I'm gonna try to hang on to some this year, to mix into our Thanksgiving dressing, and just make it a little, just kind of take it in a slightly different direction, because the nuttiness and the sweetness and the, oh yeah. So that's there. Also, I had a communication earlier this afternoon from the home office of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Chairman and CEO Harold said, the Horn Family Community Congregation might be interested in new subscribers, or, no, I'm sorry, I'm reading that wrong. The Horn Family Community Congregation being interested in new subscribers, there might be an interest in the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society's 641% campaign. As such, the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, or as we like to call it there at the meetings of the society, the Sochtress. The Sochtress, Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, is going to round up the next two $10 subscriptions. You go to headonradionetwork.com, you click the tab Contribute, and you put in $10 and fill in the data, and you click that box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Well, the next two people that do that, thanks to the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, will have their subscriptions multiplied by 641% for the first month. Wow. That's big. The next two subscribers to the Horn, because one of the things that I've mentioned is that this time of the month is the time of the month when the cupboard is bare for subscribers. 26th, 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st, book us. So we really, really need to fill in that gap a little bit if we could, please. And for this evening, two subscribers, $10 a month, and your two $10 a month subscriptions will be multiplied by 641%. Rounded up. See, that's the thing. It's a roundup society, and it will be rounded up 641%. And thank you very kindly to Harold, chairman and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. Thank you very, very much. And all told, we got $400 to raise tonight. 10 at 40, 40 at 10, 1 at 400, 2 at 200, 4 at 100, 8 at 50, 16 at 25. Yeah. 32 at 12.50, 64 at 6 and a quarter, and 128 at $3.13. Mm-hmm. So that's where it all stands, and hopefully we'll have it all knocked down by the end of the program. It sure would be great to see Harold's Sochtris offer knocked out, say, in the next 30 minutes. I mean, the offer's good through the evening. But let's do that quickly, could we? Because it's kind of cool. You click the box, you set it, you forget it, and you're done. And it's worth remembering that a couple of bumper stickers will go out to you along the way. You know, the horn bumper sticker and the They Want It All bumper sticker. Yes, we've still got some. Okay, so... Randy in PA says, please date stamp the program, Bob. You weren't on air for the first 4.5 minutes. That's my fault. That's because I don't have a producer. We don't have a great big team of people running thither and yon and talking to little devices that are in my ear. It's, you know, pretty much all me. And so consequently, yes, this is the horn for the 26th day of August, 2016. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Steve in New York pointing out your Gazintan is getting right good. Actually, that's Cyphron. That's Cyphron. But I thank you. I thank you just the same. And thank you very kindly to Charlene in Florida, who has just knocked down the fundraising by $100. Thank you very, very, very kindly. So that means we got $300 to go. And remember, those two subscriptions that get rounded up by 641%. That's awesome. So as I noted, it is Friday on the front porch on the horn. And that means that, here in about 45 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and you can be a part of that. I encourage you to be part of that. We have a darn good time every Friday, and sometimes some pretty rousing conversations into the bargain. And if you want to participate, just a reminder, Skype is the best way to do it. Don't worry about the quality of your voice. Just join the conversation. This is something that doesn't happen on other programs. It just doesn't. And so, just load Skype on your machine, do all the setup and stuff, and then send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll point you toward the breadcrumb trail. And he's already lit the Bob signal, and it's shining up against the clouds. Well, it's kind of broad daylight, but let's say it's shining up against the clouds in maybe the UK or something. Yeah, that works. Then, you know, you can jump in and participate. For those of you who can absolutely not deal with Skype, we do have the stress line for you, 304-663-4676, if you want to participate that away. Okay? Okay. Now, first off, just a little recommendation. If you want to giggle, I saw this shortly before airtime. Go over to Raw Story. There's a headline there. Jimmy Kimmel ridicules conspiracy loon Alex Jones for being a Hillary Clinton pickle truther. Because that's something that really happened. Oh, did I say Hillary Clinton? I meant to say the devil! I know. I'm wearing that bit out, aren't I? But as long as I keep getting messages talking about what a horrible, bad, terrible, really no good human being she is, and, you know, from people who actually know that she's running against a really, really horrible, terrible, no good, very bad human being, I think I'm going to have to keep using it. Or maybe we could do a reverse sponsorship of some sort, you know, where I stop doing that. But anyway. So Jimmy Kimmel had Hillary Clinton on his program, and he does some funny stuff from time to time, and sort of making a mockery out of the Hillary's health thing. And I don't know how much the Hillary hating society over here on the left
went left. yeah.
I don't know how much they go in for the health thing. I suspect there are some that are the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So, you know, when Alex Jones, for instance, says
she stole the nomination from Bernie Sanders,
I'm sure there are some out there on our side that go, dude, yeah, like, really, you know? But anyway, this is hilarious. He did this bit where, in order to prove that she is strong enough and fit enough and healthy enough to be president, she, on live television, opened a jar of pickles. This drove Alex Jones absolutely further out of his tree. He left the solar system, as far as I can tell. Repeatedly talking about how
that's not how you open a can of pickles. That's how you open a can of peanut butter.
You know what? I think we figured out Alex Jones's problem. Remember when Jim the other night was talking about World War II era MREs? I think Alex Jones has like cans of outdated government food that he's been living on down in the bunker for years. He should probably get in touch with Jim Baker and maybe get some bucket pudding. But that's it. He's eating bad canned food, pickles out of cans, peanut butter out of cans. Yeah, that's it. Canned. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't know who said it on my Facebook page, but not on my Facebook page, on the Horn Facebook page. I've been laughing all week because I keep seeing it, and it deserves to be shared, and it's Friday on the front porch, and that's the time for sharing this kind of thing. There was a post over on the Horn group. It's a closed group. If you want to join up, you got to axe. But it was a post about Jim Baker's bucket pudding and bucket food and bucket soup and bucket supper. And way down in the comments, someone, and I wish I could give you credit. Send me an email if you're the person who said it, and I will give you credit. Said it, credit. Oh, my. I've got a poetry career ahead of me, I suspect. You can tell by my feet, you know, they're long fellas. It's been a quiet week in Mount Colby gone. No, stop that. But whoever it was simply said, Jim Baker reminds me of the sort of person who enjoy... See? Oh, preemptive cowbell. Jim Baker reminds me of the sort of person who enjoys group enemas. See, I mean, not to overanalyze just a nice, simple little piece of comedy, but it would have been just kind of ill if it was Jim Baker reminds me of the sort of person who enjoys enemas. But it's the simple... It's the simple edition of the... It's the simple edition of the word group that rendered, and apparently still kind of continues to render me helpless. I just had this mental image of all these good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals standing there, or kneeling there, or lying there, I don't know, with their little hoses all sort of one after another like dominoes. Jesus! 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 And this, never mind, this probably reflects more on me than the... Get it together. All right. All better now. But anyway, go over to Raw Story and just find the Alex Jones pickle truther thing, because the bit really is cute and funny. Asa tells me it was Bill who made the enema comment. Hear, hear. It was precious. But go ahead. Not right now. But go over and just watch, because what makes it funny is that he, as we so often do on this program, he actually incorporates the clip of the Alex Jones conniption. And he has been in high dudgeon of late. He's all worked up at Hillary now, screaming that
they have created a fake Alex Jones,
because she sort of called him out in her what is now being referred to as alt-right speech. God, I remember when alt was a simple little word that was frequently attached with a hyphen to the word country, and indicated some, you know, pretty damn good music. But no, now it means Nazis and Klansmen and chemtrails and all of vaccines, and right, Wi-Fi. Oh wait, that's alt left. Never mind. So enjoy at your leisure. But I had some stuff I wanted to go into this evening. A couple of things. Local stuff. Now, this actually may make the... has made national media. And it, I wouldn't even mention it except for the fact that, A, it's West Virginia, and B, everybody's kind of missing one of the central points of the story. Just a sec. quick update on the Joe Manchin's precious lumpkin daughter Heather Bresch story. Now that Heather Bresch, otherwise known as Martin Shkreli in a skirt, has come to national attention, you know, she and her the story of her bogus MBA and the fact that she's gotten a $16 million raise as CEO of a pharmaceutical company, even though we don't even know if she passed freshman biology. I opted for geology. I did. The 10th grade dissecting the grasshopper. The frog didn't bother me. Grasshopper just grossed me the right on out. So I went for my science. I did geology, synclines, anticlines, crystalline structures, the Mohs hardness scale. Yeah, apparently established by Mrs. Moe. Oh, stop it! But anyway, Heather Manchin Bresch, as the head of Mylan Pharmaceuticals, who have jacked up the price of life-saving EpiPens from somewhere around $57 to $650. Well, in an attempt at, in a hopeless attempt at damage control, Mylan Pharmaceuticals has announced that there's going to be a discount on the EpiPen. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Andrew Brown, a reporter at the Charleston Gazette, wrote, "The company, which was founded in West Virginia and maintains a laboratory in Morgantown, announced the price discount for uninsured and underinsured users of its auto-injection drug Thursday morning, and said the discount could cut up to $300 off the cost of the drug." In a news release, some PR flack at Mylan wrote, "For patients who were previously paying the full amount of the company's list price for EpiPen, this effectively reduces their out-of-pocket cost exposure by 50%. Exposure. They cannot resist engaging in some weasel speak. Exposure. Their cost exposure. No, it's just cost. One of these days, one of the single largest growth jobs in Merca has just got to be copy editing. But so far, no. What a pity. Now, here's what's interesting. There's nothing in there about the people who have previously been gouged. Arthur pointing out, Mylan Pharmaceuticals, where the 23rd pair is free. Pointing out, that was the slogan for a real shoe store in Daytona Beach, Florida. What was that? Chromosomes and pumps? I don't know. But damage control, nah, not so much. And like I said, you'll notice it's only for un- and underinsured people. If you've got insurance, they're going to keep gouging your insurance because your insurance is now heavily subsidized by we the people. So we the people of the United States out there working to form that more perfect union, which includes trying to insure every American but not quite getting the job done, and instead providing a massive corporate welfare payout to the health insurance industry. No, we keep getting gouged. We keep paying the $645 for a two-pack every year bill. And if there's any good to come out of this story, it's this. If you are one of those people who has to have an EpiPen and needs to have them handy, then please go and check the expiration date on yours, because they're only good for a year. And you don't want to be caught with an expired EpiPen. Please check. Jeremy in Vermont says, I feel the pain of people with EpiPens. As a type 1 diabetic without insurance between both types of insulin, it's well over $700 a month. Oh, yeah. Diabetes is a growth industry. And that's just to survive without major repercussions from not taking it. You know what? Any minute now, I expect a note to come in from our good friend Robert in Australia pointing out that it probably, his insulin in Australia probably runs about 10 bucks Australian a month. And that's the way it should be. Except for capital, you know, because money, because capitalism, because Ayn Rand. But Joe Manchin, who is a blight on West Virginia, finally responded on Thursday to the controversy swirling around his precious baby girl and said, I'm aware of the questions my colleagues and many parents are asking, and frankly, I share their concerns about the skyrocketing prices of prescription drugs. Today I heard Mylan's initial response, and I am sure Mylan will have a more comprehensive and formal response to those questions. I look forward to reviewing their response in detail and working with my colleagues and all interested parties to lower the price of prescription drugs and to continue to improve our health care system. Well, gee, Joe, does that mean we can count you in on as a co-sponsor of the Medicare for All Act of 2017 when the next Congress starts? No, we can't. Aw, damn, Joe. And see, you'll notice that Joe kind of slithered and slimed and weaseled. He sleazled. That's it. He sleazled around the fact that it's not an, I mean, yes, it is an overall problem, but this is a specific problem. I too, am worried about the cost of prescription drugs. Well, Joe, it's not, thank you, but it's your daughter's less than $1 a dose prescription drug that she's charging $646 per two-pack for that we're kind of, you know, worried about. And there we go. I conjured Robert in Australia. Bob, knowing that an average person can't pay the insane prices drug companies charge, here in Australia we have a socialist pharmaceutical benefits scheme, PBS. As a result of the cost, the cost of a set of two EpiPens will run you about $38, and I don't know if that's Australian or U.S. On a side note, wouldn't it be nice if all the corporations charged per item based on how much profit they wanted to make that year? A loaf of bread? Yeah, that'll be $120, please. Precisely. I mean, like in, you know, exactly.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
Oh, that'll be off.
See? Exactly that. Thank you, Vince Ricardo and Sheldon Cornpit. So that's just kind of an update. That's not really, you know, where I'm headed here. Oh, in the meantime, though, I think I understand why Joe has gotten kind of, you know, upset. Because in the last week or two, the stock value, which constitutes a whole lot of Precious Lumpkin Heather's compensation, the stock value of Mylan Pharmaceuticals has vomited forth about $3 billion of value. Because investors took a look and said, you know, I think I'm going to get out of this before something awful happens. On August the 19th, Mylan stock dropped from $49.20 a share to $43.11 a share on August 24th. That's a net loss of somewhere around $3 billion. I mean, you know, really, Heather? Did you have to do that? Well, yeah, I guess she did. Because, see, she's a mansion. And if there's one truth in West Virginia, it is that no mansion has ever been caught giving a damn about anybody not named Mansion or directly associated with La Familia Mansion. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of how it works. Here's hoping that Mylan's stock continues to drop like a paralyzed falcon. By the way, that was Australian 38 bucks for the EpiPens, which is about $29 US. Which means that for every EpiPen sold in Australia, Mylan makes 29 times its cost for the drug itself. Oh, and by the way, Mylan never got a bill for developing the EpiPen because Mylan did not develop the EpiPen. You know who developed the EpiPen? We, the people of the United States, working on that more perfect union. Mm-hmm. And then we just gave it away for free so that Heather Bresch, with her BS in political science from Harvard on the Mon, could give herself a $16 million raise on the backs of people with allergies. I mean, 29 times your cost. I know we've got accounting types in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Anybody want? I mean, if you're running a company and you can average 29 times cost, remember, not a business type. That's why I'm not running one. But, hey, jug a punch. I think you know this kind of thing. If you're running a company who makes 29 times cost on what you're doing, you're going to remain a going concern, aren't you? I mean, it's not time to put up the fire sale banner. All drugs must go, is it? And see, here's Randy in PA trying to just ruin my head with math. You mean the market price of the company, which is the stock price times the number of outstanding shares. It may actually be that this is a theoretical integral, since selling 10% of the company's shares depresses the stock price of the remaining shares. Further proof that it's a damn fine thing that I was not an accounting major, a math major, or an economics major. No. No. Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room saying 29 times. Try again, Bob. 450 times. No. What I'm saying is in Australia, where, you know, they've got a socialist prescription benefits scheme, Mylan Pharmaceuticals gets 29 times their cost for an EpiPen. I mean, that's the out-of-pocket for an Australian. I'm sure the government is subsidizing it. But the government has negotiated, et cetera, et cetera. But my question is, even at that base level, 29 times cost, it costs you a dollar to make the pen, and you make $29 on every one. Well, that's not fair either. Okay, $14.50. But I think my point is taken and understood. Let's see. Note coming in from Kim in New Jersey. In regard to me saying that I might be cajoled or convinced to stop using the reverb to refer to you know who. I got to find something besides you know who, though, because you know who refers to somebody else, then there's a pool involving you know who, and we have to say you know who in order to keep from triggering the pool, because Gerald. Oh, okay, yes, thank you, Arthur, adding to the calculation. All multiplied by the velocity of money. Come on, Bob, it's quite elemental, really. Says you. But Kim in New Jersey says, how much of a donation would it take to have you permanently stop using the devil thing? Oh, you can't afford it. Oh, let's see. Oh, okay, just for the fun of it. We'll have 3 days in August left next week, so that's $600 bucks. There we go. And that way we would beat the Swede, right now. Well, no. Finish off August. That's what the, yeah. So, $900. There we go. $900 to stop hearing the devil! But remember, I'm just trying to keep peace in the family, because it's pretty clear to a certain segment of the left, that's who she is until such time as some Greenie or Jill Stein person or, you know, hater or whatever will call in and tell me otherwise. Speaking of which, I had a lovely note, and this being Friday on the front porch, I love to just share input. I had a lovely note from Jen in Australia. She said, I felt compelled to reach out Monday to Louisiana Stan Jim. Sure, I don't know him exactly, but I'm becoming familiar with him, even familial in the horn way. There's something about Jim in Louisiana Stan, so steady and clear, but in his voice last Monday there was an exasperation I've never sensed. I wanted to respond, but I had nothing to offer. The feeling is mutual. I've fucking had it with this Naomi Klein-style disaster election and the endless circular bitching about things that will never happen. You said it best, so concise, one of two people will be elected in November. Full stop. One of them ain't going to be someone whose name rhymes with nil and ends in Stein. But if we let it be Trump, it will be the end result will actually be Pence in tandem with Ryan. I, too, have had it with the nonsensical Hillary bashing, the trivial, frivolous, and tedious defamatory slander and libel when there are... Really hate the new Skype interface. When there are concrete issues to scrutinize. Gaius Publius, over at downwithtyranny.blogspot.com.au, has thoughtfully put together a compact list of red flags, tells, regarding... Hillary Clinton. Wait a minute. Did I just give that away for free? Okay. Well, that was just a gesture of goodwill because I'm reading somebody else's name. HRC is what Jen put. Regards HRC. Where better, and this may be... Todd, the devil is cheap around here. I mean, being as how he ain't real and stuff. Because Todd just emailed and said, your price on the devil was priceless. there's suggestions rolling in. Steve in New York says we can replace the reverb by referring to simply Voldemort, which you're not supposed to say. Maybe we could say she whose name must not be mentioned. And that way keep some peace in the family. Back to Jen's note. Where better, and this could lead into something, this being Friday on the front porch. Where better to have a conversation with Hillary supporters than on the horn, if you're so inclined, and I am. I mean, it you know, people feel comfortable calling in to harangue me over Jill Stein. I think it's perfectly appropriate to call in and tell why it is you think that, you know, HRC is... I gave that one away for free. That one was on me. Damn it. See why we stay in hock for the Gulfstream 5? See? But I would... No, if you want to call in and talk about how awesome Hillary is, you're welcome to. I may not agree with you any more than I'm going to agree on how awesome Jill Stein is. For an entirely different set of reasons, mind you. Never mind. But, Jen says... Where better to have a conversation with Hillary supporters than on the Horn, if you're so inclined? Your listeners, not my listeners, the Horn Family Community Congregation, must have some active Hillary enthusiasts, unlike we who are simply resigned. It would be riveting to hear Hillocrats respond to Gaius Publius' insight, not conflict, insight. I think it would be a great radio to hear their response to these facts, how they comport with their perception of Hillary as a progressive. And I kind of have a hard time reading that without snorting. I also believe that you are probably one of the only people behind a microphone who could do so patiently and with respect. God knows I try. I really do. I mean, that's the whole idea here. It's not to provide some sort of theater whereby people yell at each other. It's an attempt to create conversation in a medium where conversation is quite often rare as hen's teeth. And so, yeah, patiently and respectfully. And we have our fun, we kid, we carry on, we joke, we cuss. But at the end of the day, I would hope that we understand that we're all pretty much on the same side. So Jen then provides courtesy of Gaius Publius 8 Hillary tells regarding the potential direction of her presidential administration. 1. She obviously supports fracking, but clearly also the TPP because Ken Salazar. 2. Why put a person opposed to her policies in charge of her transition team? Recall her heavily qualified repudiation. I cannot support it the way it's currently written, an obfuscation reinforced by Terry McAuliffe saying, of course, after the election, she'll change a couple of things here and there and approve it. Hello, Fast Track disallows amendments. Tell number 2, Tim Kaine is Mr. TPP. Tell number 3, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Tell number 4, she directly supports those who are working to defeat Zephyr Teachout. Remember, Madeline, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women. Albright? Which part of hell is reserved for one who turns a blind eye to vulture capitalist Paul Singer's bought-up Argentinian debt-sourced money pouring into defeating Zephyr Ditto Re Florida's fake Democrat Patrick Murphy. Also, even worse, almost even worse, where's Hillary's direct and open support of any progressive candidate on the ballot anywhere? Tell number 5, her climate team of advisors are almost all fracking czars and lobbyists. Yeah, that's a problem for me. Tell number 6, Clinton voters on the DNC platform committee voted against nearly every progressive proposition and succeeded in voting down a provision to prevent a lame duck TPP vote. Tell number 7, her numerous associations with Third Way Dems HQ, the group of conservadems who want everything we don't want. I would add her association with C Street, the family. Doesn't matter if it's not current. Don't know about the current status of that nefarious connection. Tell number 8, the 2014 Clinton Global Initiative annual meeting was a neoliberal networking cesspool. Keynote speakers included Noble Energy CEO and strategy sessions were nothing more than meetings of the one percenters. Like you, I've said I'll fill in the oval next to her name, but only as a vote against Mr. Bigley Small, not for her. It is said I may not have to in Massachusetts, but people who say that aren't familiar with the Boston pissed-off white boys who are loving them some Trump. The WWWFU crowd, not Beacon Hill, but Waltham, Worcester, Wrentham, Framingham, and Upton. And finally, a note on my ongoing snarky remarks about patchouli. In defense of patchouli oil, blended one part each with orange oil and orange flower oil, it can be lovely, and with a dash each of lime, black pepper oil, and sandalwood, most sensually masculine. Actually doesn't sound like it smells terrible. If you want to whip up a batch, Jen, and you think it'll clear customs, I'm open to trying, but it doesn't sound like I have anything I have any business fooling with. So there. Okay. I'm in trouble again. Note from Ron and Raleigh, subject line correction. Hey, Bob, to the best of my knowledge, you know who refers to Tom Hartman. Will I have to get a restraining order to stop this blatant gimmick infringement? It was not intentional. It was entirely a matter of negligence on my part, Ron. I apologize profusely. Now I got to figure out what to call the guy with the chaplain, the homicidal maniac with the chaplain mustache, because homicidal maniac with the chaplain mustache is just too big a mouthful. Some days. Okay. That's the thing. We do group problem solving here at the Horn. Steve in New York says, as a replacement for her and the reverb, how about She Who Must Not Be Mentioned? SWMNBMS. Southwest Moonbeam. That's almost better than, that could be like her Secret Service code name. If Agent Fred shows up at your house, Steve, that ain't my fault. Southwest Moonbeam. That's right up there with Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. And I am proud to announce that one of the two offers of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society has been taken. Thank you very kindly to Melton. Thanks indeed very, very much. Melton in California, you just got your first month's contribution rounded up, courtesy of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, by 641%. Thank you again, Melton. Thank you very kindly. So one more of those remains. Oh, there's another suggestion. How about Mr. Ava Brown for the other? Yeah. Oh! It's a minefield, I tell you. A minefield. I just got a memo in from Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Wait a goddamn minute! I thought She Whose Name Must Not Be Spoken or She Who Must Not Be Mentioned referred to the Tundra Twunt. And it does! I think we're back to Southwest Moonbeam. So Southwest Moonbeam. Your thoughts? Okay. But what a note coming in from Clarence, subject line, Hillary. How about Watergate Wonder Woman? So we got that. We're down to this. Watergate Wonder Woman and Southwest Moonbeam. I lean towards Southwest Moonbeam because it's absolutely neutral. No. Okay, so the homicidal maniac with the chaplain mustache is now out, courtesy of Jack in Shreveport. Oh, great. Somebody mentions the guy with the chaplain mustache. That made me think of the word chaplain, C-H-A-P-L-A-I-N, and that made me think of Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt. Then there's always Goldwater Girl, and that's true, and we could just shorten that to G-G. Oh, dear, we are a litigious bunch, aren't we? Note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa in Vancouver. If we're going to get all uppity about the you-know-who reference, I might have to file a countersuit against the Raleigh contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation for the infringement upon my air check gimmick. I don't think that's Ron doing that. You don't want to, now be careful there, Asa. You don't want to file a frivolous infringement claim in the court of public opinion of the Horn Family Community Congregation. That jury can be brutal. So, the other thing that I actually meant to get to, because, well, this is a real Lulu. I mean, restaurant quality. And like I said, it comes out of West Virginia, and it's hit the national wires. But everybody seems to be kind of burying the lead. Bless their hearts. Eric Iyer is a wonderful reporter at the Charleston Gazette. But he buried the lead. So we're gonna check out some audio on the front end of this real quick. Just be patient with me. There's really nothing to the video end of this. It's a bunch of, three reasonably attractive women wearing like little spaghetti strap white cami tops, standing in front of a poorly stretched white, scrim, reading a particularly noxious script. Here we go. Oh, you might want to... Hockey puck. Just saying.
I've been thinking a lot about a phrase I've been hearing, that anti-racist is just a code word for anti-white.
It's starting to make sense. They say that they're anti-racist, but what they really are is anti-white.
Think about it.
Nobody says that a black neighborhood needs more diversity.
Nobody says that an Asian neighborhood needs diversity.
White neighborhoods and only white neighborhoods are said to need more diversity.
Nobody says that a black church needs more diversity.
Nobody says that Asian churches need more diversity.
White churches and only white churches need more diversity.
Black pride is seen as good and healthy and normal. Asian pride is seen as good, healthy, and normal.
But if I show pride in my race, the white race, I'm said to be a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews.
If a black woman wants to date inside her race, that's acceptable.
If an Asian woman wants to date inside her race, that's acceptable.
But if I want to date and marry within my race, the white race, I'm called the R word.
Black politicians are openly admitting that they are working towards the best interests of their people. Hispanic politicians are openly admitting that they are working towards the best interests of their people.
If a white politician were to openly admit that they were working in the best interest of their people, there would be a national scandal, a public outcry, and would be kicked out of office.
Throughout elementary school, junior high school, and college, I was told that my race, the white race, was the cause of all the world's problems. Now, many of you had jobs where minorities say things that would get you, as a white person, instantly fired.
This conditioning is done to white people and only white people. White children and only white children are being affected by this, and only white countries are doing this.
The Aztecs conquered many surrounding Native American tribes, practiced human sacrifice, and held slaves.
Yet anti-racists don't say that Mexicans must apologize forever and have their lands forcibly flooded with non-Mexicans and be forced to assimilate.
The Ottoman Empire attacked white Slavs and took many of them as slaves, so much that we get the word slave from the Slavs.
Yet anti-racists don't say that the Turks must apologize forever and have their lands flooded with non-Turks.
World history is a rainbow of violence.
Yet all whites and only whites are demonized for this violence. Anti-racism is the code word for anti-white. Resist this conditioning by using this mantra.
Africa for the Africans, Asia for the Asians, white countries for everyone.
Had enough? Thoroughly disgusted? Puking in a bucket? So, this goes back to 2013. And one of the women in the video is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, by the name of Carrie Bow. Carrie Bow, up until like yesterday, was the assistant communications director for West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, who, prior to becoming the Attorney General of West Virginia, was a lobbyist for the drug industry, and whose wife is still a lobbyist for the drug industry and represents drug companies, some of whom have helped, flood West Virginia with pain meds. She started working, Carrie Bow did, for Morrissey back in January 2015. She's the one that you can hear saying, anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. Mm-hmm. This, as Eric Iyer tells us in the Gazette story, goes back to a nasty white supremacist by the name of Bob Whitaker from, of course, Charleston, South Carolina, Stan. Carol Baker asks, is this a Klan recruitment video? Well, not really, but sure, yes. Now, it's a subset. It's a new way of approaching white supremacy under the guise that somehow, and even this is recycled, that the white race is under attack. There's a genocide against the white race. Well, Carrie Bow, the instant that Patrick Morrissey found out about it, because he's busy running for re-election, he canned her. And she, in turn, told West Virginia Public Broadcasting she is embarrassed and heartbroken, over getting caught. Reading the script, though, she says,
Growing up, you could not question why some races could talk or behave a certain way, and it was seen as okay, whereby if the behavior was repeated by a white person, it was automatically racist. As a child and a teenager, the inability to even question this was confusing and really the opposite of the honest dialogue we need to have in order to understand different cultures and their history better. If I tell you the ongoing truth about genocide against my race, the white race, liberals and respectable conservatives agree that I'm a Nazi that wants to kill 6 million Jews. My favorite line, though, is the one she says where throughout elementary school, junior high, high school, and college, I was told that my race, the white race, was the cause of all the world's problems. I think that's probably a lie. Because, I mean, we've put some kids through the public education system. I'm a child of the public education system. Never not once was that said to me. What she's, what the author of the script is obliquely objecting to is the fact that there is that if the Klan ever gets brought up, it's brought up as being a bad thing, you know, because it is. And then the white nationalist horse shit of Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody. And, of course, the she utters the utter, the absolutely vile and filthy phrase, final solution. Echoing, of course, the, you know, the Nazis. And, meanwhile, though, she went to Facebook, Carrie Bo did, to say she would greatly appreciate prayers during this time, thoughts and prayers. And then using all caps, she said she is truly sorry. P.S. I sincerely ask, should you see something of concern, please don't pass it along or engage in public conversation on the matter. But like I said, there's a buried lead. And here it is. She came to the Attorney General's office having previously been the Member Relations Director with an outfit called the Family Policy Council of West Virginia. See, that's what should have been the lead. Christian former spokesman for Family Policy Council of West Virginia caught in Klan video. That's the lead. Because that's the source. White wing upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gunned mentalist. Organizations like the Family Policy Council of West Virginia are up to their eyebrows in this kind of vile, filthy, white supremacist, Klan, proto-Nazi filth. The Family Policy Council of West Virginia, they're one of those outfits that's all worried about where the little white children, people going potty where they're not supposed to go potty like Jesus wants them to potty. And what about the precious little fetuses? And, of course, along the way, Carrie Bo never disclosed
that she had been in a white supremacist video. In fact, by way of her little Facebook mea culpa, she said, obviously, I should have paid more attention to the script. What, did she think it was an acting job? You know, this is my moment. I'm ready for my close-up, Max. I'm ready for my close-up, Jethro. In response, Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, Dear Lord, L-O-R-D-E, getting all Elizabethan this evening. Ron writes, I'm wiping a tear from my eye, kind of like Iron Eyes Cody used to do in that PSA. Pity the poor white race, put upon and victimized. How can you stand the horror? I actually dared venture into the comments for this. Usually I know better. Didn't take long. But there they were. The white supremacists jumping out in defense. Not a whole bunch of them, but they're there. Patrick Morrissey is a traitor and Kerry Bowe is a patriot. Tyrants within the USA are using legal and illegal immigration policies to create a house divided that cannot stand. The inevitable collapses, C-O-L-L-A-P-E-S, the inevitable collapses will allow the tyrannical ruling overlords to create an oligarchy plutocracy with a huge mass of competing, bickering, divided serf-like commoners powerless under their tyrannical overlords. There is but one way to fight tyranny, and the founders' writings told us what to do. Then this particular little gem. If this was a Negro blaming whites for his plight in life, would it be a Black Lives Matter video? Would they get forward? Would it be broadcast all over the world by the media? Most likely yes to all, and he wouldn't get fired. So there is something wrong with the way whites are treated when they express what they believe, regardless if people consider it disgusting, racist, or whatever. Yes, in case you were wondering, that was all one sentence after the question mark. Oh my God, no. What? Carol Baker tells me, obligatory Star Trek reference. It's dead, Jim. Yes, Facebook is down. Twitter, this is your moment. Sparkle. Jack in Shreveport said, WVAG. I thought you were going to connect Terry Bowe to the WVAG office and to a pharmaceutical lobbyist and then on to Mylan and Manchin's daughter and Manchin. So you got white supremacists, religious nuts, big coal, big pharma, U.S. Senate, WVAG all connected together. Well, you know, they kind of are. I have no doubt that the last time the West Virginia Policy Council had a bean dinner, Joe Manchin showed up. Used to be he never missed a West Virginians for Life bean dinner. And then not too much further down in the comments, there's the obligatory Robert C. Byrd reference. And then I think she's a member of the Klan Ladies Auxiliary. Has anyone else picked up on the sheer irony that the AG's firing of her actually proves the points made in the video? Welcome to West Virginia. But it's a pretty well detailed article. I learned something I didn't necessarily know in the article. There are only three people of color in the entire 134-member West Virginia legislature. I think she probably did. The lady in the comments section, Arthur, asked, did that lady go to the upstairs Sarah Palin School of Copy Editing? Darn Skippy. And I guess the editorial board, somebody would have blue penciled it or something if the reporter had actually lid with the connection to a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, fetus fetishist outfit and potty prohibitionists. But we got all kinds of hissies going on. Big time upsetness taking place in Morgantown at Harvard on the Mon. The White Wing went crazy this week over political correctness because they claimed that my alma mater, Harvard on the Mon, is going to prosecute people for language usage. Yeah, really. Over at that website that rhymes with light and fart and smells about the same, they've claimed that if a WVU student or professor doesn't use a preferred transgender person's pronoun, that they're going to be in violation of federal laws. Where did it all come from? Over on the Title IX website, which wingnuts are now scouring all over the country, there's a kerfuffle taking place at the State University of New York, Binghamton, even as I speak, over an attempt to teach incoming freshmen how to get along with each other, whether they be white, black, Asian, Latino, whatever. You know, just how to get along, because that happens at college. Oh no, there's the goddamn iron-heeled, jack-booted, thuggish tyranny is on the God-fearing white necks of white God-fearing Americans up in Binghamton. Well, it's happening in Morgantown, too. Light fart, other and those things spread like wildfire. It all comes from the Title IX section of the website at WVU, where they've put up a list of resources that students can examine who want to be sensitive to the needs of transgender students. And there's information there from the National Center for Transgender Student Equality that includes this statement. You have the right to be called by the name and pronouns consistent with your gender identity. In other words, a trans woman can be she and her, and a trans man can be he and him and his. And if a person wants to be referred to as they, that's cool too. In other words, the university saying exactly the opposite of what the light fart outfit is saying, that they're not going to start a culture war over pronouns. Meanwhile, there's also a separate policy of non-discrimination over subjects including gender identity and sexual orientation. Anti-harassment policies. But never mind. It's a great matter of constitutional crisis if a butthurt little wingnut decides it is. Well, I didn't mean to filibuster nearly as much as I just did. Whew. we've had ourselves quite a bit of ground that we've covered. And we will probably cover even more when we get to the front porch, because it's that time. Again, on Skype, if you've never done it before, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and Sparky will teach you all about how to get in on the Friday conversation. Okay? If you absolutely need a phone line for it, we've got the stress line for you. Area code 304-663-4676. So at 22 minutes past the hour, we'll take a little break. We've got another 641% roundup available for the next $10 a month subscriber. Your first month's contribution will be rounded up courtesy of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society by 641%. We've got another $300 to raise this evening. And as we run downhill toward beating the Swede for our eighth consecutive month. All right, fire it up, Sparky. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
I realized quickly when I knew I should that the world was made up of this brotherhood of man, for whatever that means. Into a crisis of times when I'm lying in bed just to get it all out what's in my head, and I am feeling a little peculiar. Into a
life is still trying to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination.
I just like that song, Four Non-Blondes, What's Up? About 29 minutes after the hour, we're right at the halfway point of Friday on the Front Porch. And since I fill a bobster to waste so damn much of it, let's not shilly-shally about. Let's run straight over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and say good evening to Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. Some salsa just come back up on me.
That doesn't sound pretty.
Anyway, things are cooling off out here, and come
next. Put it out there for everyone.
So you may be folding space sooner. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, next week it's looking good. So I can shut down Studio 2 and move it back to the man cave.
Very nice. Very nice.
Anyway, I got a Rick report to give.
Oh yeah, Rick's not going to be.
He can't join us tonight.
Well, it's that time of year. He's being billable, isn't he?
Well, he's working at home, but he's got an event tonight.
Ah.
He just wanted to let know that next Friday he'll have a concert report for you, with the Journey Santana concert this Sunday. He's going.
Oh, not so much the Journey part, but the Santana part. I'll definitely be down for.
And then tonight he's heading out to see the Cubbies play the Dodgers.
Oh, very fun. When does Geezer Palooza take place in Coachella?
Oh, it's coming up. I think it's in September, isn't it?
I believe it's September. I think so.
It's funny.
September or October.
You know what? I love making you laugh, Alex.
Isn't she delightful?
But it is. It's Geezer Palooza. I mean, there's not going to be a single act under 70 years old, right?
It's so funny. Do you know, it reminds me of something. A couple of years ago, I took this class. It was an art class at kind of a community art center, and it was it's for adult education, but they had seniors, so you can a senior group. Well, I was like a few years shy of what they had the cutoff for seniors, but when I went into the class, I was considered the hot mama because everybody else was in their 60s and 70s,
Right.
The hot mama geezer.
Well, I mean, and I say that with absolute love in my heart because. One of these young whippersnapper, wet behind the ears, Johnny Come Lately artists. You find him in a bathtub with 16 empty liquor bottles, 7 blunt wrapper roaches, a mirror with an ounce the dregs of an ounce baggie of cocaine, and Keith Richards looks down at him and goes, "You're not even trying."
Yeah, it's so funny.
And frankly, in terms of quality of show, I'd a damn sight rather see the Stones than a whole bunch of what passes for hot happening and right now.
Oh, and it's funny because we talk about what's going on as far as regression and even things that are worse than ever as far as racism, sexism, just the way humanity treats each other in general, and it's reflected in music, because if you think about the sophistication of the music that we grew up with in the 60s and 70s, and now the popular music that young people are listening to, the popular music, it reflects our culture because it's so synthetic, it's so without soul, it's so commercial, it's this teeny bopperish, vacant, shallow music, and it's reflective. It's so reflective of our society now. When you think about the music that we were listening to and how, nuanced and how sophisticated it was, it's, I just think about that, you know?
Well, Alex, I go back and forth on this. I know there's good there's plenty of good music being produced, but the changes to the music industry have made it harder to find. And I also have to balance it against, my own geezerdom.
But you know what? There's a thing going on about that. It's okay. You know, this whole thing about saying, well, I'm older and I got to be more open-minded. But you know what? It's okay to say the music sucks today and the music was better when we grew up. It's okay to say it.
Yeah, but the thing is, there was a ton of sucky music back then, too.
Yeah. But you could put on the radio and hear, like, Cream and Santana. I mean, you know, the music, the quality and the incredible music that was going on then versus now, you know, as far as, you know, what we hear.
But you could also put on Having My Baby by Paul Anka and just puke your guts up, you know?
Yeah.
Or You Light Up My Life. Or Feelings.
I still like the Petite Oil and Earth Shoes music.
So do I. And, you know, like I said, I first learned about patchouli from a line in Year of the Cat. And many people do not share my appreciation of Al Stewart's lyricism, or they hate his voice. His lyrics are okay. Terrible voice. That's where I learned about it. And, you know, music taught me a lot. And I don't hear a whole lot of that aspect. I mean, the intellectualism doesn't seem to be there, not in the mainstream stuff. And again, I offer that caveat. I know it's out there. I mean, when you got people like Bruce Springsteen talking about. What an undeniable genius Jason Isbell is, or you know, or if you listen to that Alabama Shakes album that took such accolades at the last Grammys, and of course that's all Alabama centric, but there's great stuff being produced. I gotta get better at finding it.
But you know, it's funny because when I was 13, I was listening to Led Zeppelin, Squeeze Me Baby Until the Juice Runs Down My Leg. And people of 13 and now are adoring Jason Bieber and Katy Perry and Taylor Swift. I mean, at 13, we were listening to Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Led Zeppelin.
You know what? Yeah, okay. So you mentioned Taylor Swift.
Yeah, disgusto.
I mean, I'm not going to go that far, but. I remember when Ferg walked in and had a song on his phone, and you know, there's another disconnect with that with the previous generations. He had a what on his what, and he said, "Listen, this is a great song." I gotta see if I can find the lyric.
While you're doing that, Bob,
okay. Wait, Steve. Steve, you know every song. What's the Taylor Swift song about? Remember me in a really nice dress.
I don't know. You stumped me.
Some of these artists, if someone else sings it, it could sound better.
I wanted to jump in on.
Oh, that's okay. Okay, that's it. Standing in a Nice Dress.
She mentioned the Lemon Song by Led Zeppelin, "Squeeze Me, Baby, Till the Juice Runs Down My Leg." That's actually Robert Johnson, if you trace the trail back.
Probably, yeah. But I was listening to that at 13. Now, what are 13-year-olds listening to now compared to 40 something years ago? How, you know, it's just so poppy. So shallow, so teeny bopperish compared to my generation, where we listen to that kind of stuff. It just reflective of our culture in general.
So here's the lyric.
Okay.
It comes from a song called Wildest Dreams. And it, you know, it attempts to be a story song. He said, let's get out of this town, drive out of the city, away from the crowds. I thought heaven can't help me now. Nothing lasts forever, but this is gonna take me down. He's so tall and handsome as hell. He's so bad, but he does it so well. I can see the end as it begins. My one condition is, say you'll remember me standing in a nice dress, staring at the sunset, babe, red lips and rosy cheeks. Say you'll see me again, even if it's just in your wildest dream. Aha, oh, wildest dreams. Aha, oh. And it, it goes on from there. But it was that one line, standing in a nice dress. And there was something about that where I thought, you know, Jesus Christ, if somebody, you know, from one of the great, my God, if Mick or Keith had written anything like that, it wouldn't have been a nice dress. It would have been some other much more...
It would have
more...
been tattered. Get it?
Okay. All right. I knew this. See, I don't just do things. Getting a note from Michael in Madison, subject line, rolling my eyes at you all.
Our taste in music is most often more what we're associating the music to. Our surroundings, what we were thinking, or what we were doing at the time we heard the music. So oftentimes, if you're having a good time with friends, wherever you're listening to music, enjoying yourself, that tends to be the type of music you like.
I agree completely. And the classic case in point, and somewhere way back in the archives of the Horn, there's a recording of the evening that our old friend David from Maine told me about the new song from Kid Rock that managed to rip off both Lynyrd Skynyrd and Warren Zevon at the same time.
Whoa. In which
there was a rhyme that rhymed the same word with itself. And I think that word was thing. And I think the song was All Summer Long. And I remember getting something right up on top of apoplectic over it. But no, Michael and Madison just wrote and said, rolling my eyes at you all, Teeny Bopper and Shallow was basically my dad's first impression of the Beatles when he first heard I Want to Hold Your Hand on the radio. What's this crap? He asked. He wasn't having it. He was into sophisticated music. Music with some teeth to it. So, I think Michael and Snork are echoing the same concept.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Scott, out here in San Diego.
No, I'd know Punky's translator's voice anywhere.
Oh, hell, he's asleep.
You only think he's almost... asleep. He's spirit channeling you.
Chirp.
No. He's definitely asleep. He's got his little head tucked under the top part of his wing, and he's just...
Hard night.
Almost hear him.
Hard night, huh?
Almost hear him snore. Did you ever get a chance to check out the TuneIn link I sent you a couple of weeks ago for a DC radio station called The Gamut?
Yes, I did a little bit.
What did you think of that?
I didn't spend a long time listening. But it was good radio.
It was definitely a wide, deep variety of stuff. I mean, one day I was sitting here waiting for your show to come on, and I had it on, and I swear to God, they segued from one song into Tom Lehrer's The Masochism Tango. Now, when was the last time?
I love psychotic radio formatting like that. There's a station that's right on the edges of the quiet zone here in the Appalachians. And you can go from Bill Monroe to Wagner to the Sex Pistols in the space of 15 minutes.
I like that.
Welcome to Segway Central.
And the thing is, like Pandora, you know, it runs on algorithms. They, you know, okay, what do you like? Pandora cannot keep up with that. That requires an absolutely insane real live disc jockey somewhere back behind a control panel.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was leading up to. My first radio job at a little FM station in southern Maryland, about 45 miles from D.C., little 3,000-watt, one-lung station in 1973. It was a middle-of-the-road station with a little bit of pop music thrown in to maybe grab some younger listeners. But we were actually permitted back then to walk in and whatever's in the music library, within the format clock, you play this, and then no two females together, no two males together, you know. I could basically walk in and craft the program and do these segues that were related either thematically or whatever, and some thought went into it. It wasn't a computer banging out, you know, one tune after another with no discernible connection. And somebody is going to make a fortune bringing back the kind of radio that requires the presence of somebody who knows a little something and brings a little heart and soul and wit to it.
You know, well, just out of curiosity, I just did a quick look up. Spotify ranks the top 500 song for millennials. Here's your list, you 18 to 35 year olds. Just on the top here, Crazy Love, Beyonce and Jay-Z, Ignition, R. Kelly, Billie Jean, Michael Jackson, Brown and Girl, Van Morrison, Enter Sandman, Metallica, Clocks, Coldplay, Fast Car, Tracy Chapman, Time to Pretend, MGMT, Timberlake, Guns N' Roses, R.E.M., Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix, Nirvana.
Oh, there's hope. There's hope.
Yeah, finally.
Oh, no, I mean, there's some decent tunage in there. It's
Aerosmith,
at the bottom of that list, yeah. But
this is like the top 500. I mean, that's they're okay. Up, they're up in like the top 10. You know, top 10, top 20. So I'll put this in the chat. You know, I mean, I just thought it was kind of funny that I was seeing all, you know, like Led Zeppelin and, you know, the millennials list.
Well, some stuff is in enduring. And look, I'll bet you this whole little conversational stream of consciousness took off with me asking when Geezer Jella is. but the audience there is not going to be Mick and Keith's contemporaries. The audience there is going to be whoever can get a damn ticket, because it's the hottest ticket on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I grew up in New York City in the 70s. So I was a teenager, and all my cohorts, you know, we could afford to go to concerts. You know, we all went. Where are we going to go? You know, we went to Madison Square Garden or the Felt Forum or the Palladium, and we can afford it, you know, to scrape up a few bucks. And we would go to the top concerts, you know.
Sure,
we saw everybody.
Sure.
You know, we grew up doing that. And now only the people that have hundreds of dollars to do this can, you know, it's like the whole, you know, it's reflect everything that's happening now, of course, is reflecting the fact that people that have can and the people that don't have can't. You know,
good point. My first show was Rush Hemispheres, and it cost me $5.
I'm sorry for you.
No need to be sorry. It was a great show.
You're younger than me. My first concert was Creedence Clearwater Revival in 1974, and Booker T and the MGs opened up for them at Forest Hill Stadium in Queens, New York.
But how much did it cost you? What was the...
Probably like $6 or something like that. I mean, you know, a few bucks. Right.
And, you know, this is reflective of the global economy, because back then, you know, tickets were cheaper because heroin was cheaper. Okay, that was supposed to be a laugh line, but I guess I guess heroin jokes are not okay now.
I was dropping acid,
going to listen to that music than shooting up heroin.
No, I was talking about the musicians.
Oh.
Okay. I was analyzing it, so.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it generated some thoughting. yeah.
I'm just glad work is over. And, of course, you know, the beleaguered VA in Phoenix, the medical director just resigned today, the one that has been there for 8 months.
Oh, my. 8 months? He imagined the whole 8 months?
She is citing mixed emotions, but due to health problems, she must resign her position.
Okay. So it's health problems and not...
3 days forced to resign.
It's health problems and not needing to spend more time with her family.
It's just unbelievable what's going on.
Todd just wrote in, you know, recalling great lyrics. I hit the city and I lost my band. I watched the needle take another man. Gone, gone, the damage done. Todd just says, wow,
I bought that album.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, you know, when I grew up, and I forget the old fogey geezer crap. I hung out with people. We would go in, find someone's house or basement or break into like some place in somewhere, sit around and listen to music, lay around and talk for hours and hours and hours. That's what we did, you know, and listen to music.
And there was no pot smoking going on, right?
You know, nothing heavy. No alcohol, really. Just smoke pot, hang out and just talk and listen to music. You know?
Yeah, right. You know, there was a fog in there. Come on, let's get real about this.
It was great. Now people run around nervously looking at their phones. That's all. It's like, that's what people do now. You know?
They're electronic leashes.
I'm not an old fogey saying, oh, technology is horrible. You know, that's bullshit. You know, there's good and bad. You know, technology works if it can work to help people, but there's a lot of horrible things about it, too. It's screwing people's brains up. You know, when your brain forms and your synapses form and your connections in your brain form, you know, it has an effect on your brain development, on your ability to relate to other human beings or lack thereof. I mean, it's a different... a different experience holding a book in your hand and reading versus looking at a screen. And you can change your brain, even when you're older, by not reading versus looking at a screen. I mean, you know, there's a lot of really horrible things going on because of, and you know what also, I think, this whole technology thing with Facebook, it is tapping into our innate need, our ego, our need, you know, to be seen, to be recognized, to feel special, to, you know, it's like this, the loneliness factor. It's like this stuff is tapping into this stuff about us that is really negative in many ways. And that's it for me.
Well, it was a little different for me. Of course, you're a little older than me. Not much. But I lived in a kind of a different place. You could hear the cutting edge of soul. Where I grew up. But the only Led Zeppelin that ever played on the radio in my hometown was Stairway to Heaven. And that only at like 3 in the morning. King Crimson. Who? Oh, you mean the Crimson Tide? No.
King Crimson rocks, Bob.
Duh.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him twice.
No, I get that. The whole thing is, It was It was a little bit more of a chore to go and find straight ahead rock and roll.
Robert Fripp is just a genius. He changed the way we listen to music. People don't realize that, you know, but it's true.
Meanwhile, everybody and their cousin who means anything in the history of rock and roll is coming in and out of Muscle Shoals. But every radio station in the area is playing, you know, adult contemporary pop hits, the obligatory country station. You know, there was one AM soul station that was worth listening to. And so, you know, you hung out at record stores or whatever and got very unique and eclectic. And
it was like a secret society. You had to find things and find each other.
Right. And then you hung out and smoked dope and listened to records. Right.
In New York City, I had it all. I had the progressive rock station.
Oh, quit rubbing it in, for Christ's sakes.
But I had all this stuff, you know, and it's funny because then years later I meet people saying, I didn't experience this until I was in my 20s or 30s. I'm thinking, Jesus, wow. And until I left New York City, I didn't realize the rest of the country, or most of the rest of the country, really was so different. You know, I had no idea that most people are not like me. In the United States, most people are like you, you know, grew up, you know, in middle America or the South. And, you know, New York City is not representative of the majority of the people's experiences here.
You're right. You're very right.
Hey, we've also got a participant on the stress line. I suspect it's Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Is that you, Jim?
That's me, Bob. I was just reminiscing about the good old days, and I kind of remember them. But one of the songs that came to mind was a Stones surprise, surprise tune, Factory Girl. Remember that one?
Ooh, I think you stumped me.
How does it go?
Hold on. We're playing Name That Tune now.
Is that something to do with Edie Sedgwick, Factory Girl? No.
How about you, Steve? Does that ring a bell for you?
I'm sorry, Bob. I was kind of drifting out there. I wasn't really paying attention.
Factory Girl, the Stones. All right. Well, I've got it here. Let's check out a couple of bars.
What are you drinking?
Charpentier.
Just by snapping.
Somebody's birthday.
Sam's anniversary, if you want to know.
Don't see your dad.
That's because he's not there.
Is it cool?
Okay, so this is like an early music video or something.
Waiting on a friend?
No. Wait, there's our problem.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There we go.
Isn't that off Goat's Head Soup or Let It Bleed, one of those two? Or
I don't know, but somebody's got the audio in their background.
No, the thing, see, what y'all talking about, because I just turned 57, but I remember... Like, it was a cool rock station in New Orleans, WRNO, and then Emerson, Lake & Palmer came out with I forget what album, and it was the album of the month, and I started to notice a change in the radio, and then I couldn't even listen to commercial radio by the time I was, like, 17, because everything was going down here, that Southern rock, which, God, except for the Allman Brothers, I can't stand. And then, you know, I discovered, you know, the punk scene and eventually the alternative scene. But, you know, it's just weird. But what I noticed about the commercial stations is you could not you had to listen to their genre of music. I mean, that's just, you know, the way it is with that.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what?
You mentioned Muscle Shoals, Have you seen that documentary?
Oh, about a million times.
Yeah. And there was another one a few years before that, and it's not available for streaming as near as I can find. It used to be. It's called Tom Dowd and the Language of Music.
I heard about that one.
Oh, they're both excellent.
Yeah, the Muscle Show. I love documentaries, especially about music. Did you see the Keith Richards documentary?
Yes.
No, I know of it, but I haven't seen it. Another good one is The Wrecking Crew.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. See, this was back when music in a lot of different ways mattered. And today, I guess it does, but it's different.
Oh, it absolutely does. I mean, it's vital. It's as vital now as it ever was. It's just different. I mean, this may be a geezer objection, but with the advent of subwoofers, the way final mixes get produced. I mean, I love me some bass, but I don't feel the need to have my my innards rearranged by it. And if you don't have a subwoofer, it wreaks absolute havoc with your system. Sound system,
CDs were pushed upon us, Bob. They do not have near the frequency levels as albums on the high or the low end. If you listen to an album, a clean album, it sounds so much richer than the CDs that the industry has pushed upon us.
You know, that might be true, but you're starting to sound like Baba Booey on the Howard Stern Show and his pushing albums thing. And that might be true. I can't really tell. And I mean, I don't know where you go to get a stereo, much less or a phonograph to play an album.
Oh, you can buy them anywhere.
Well, Michael in Madison.
I got some relics you can buy.
Record players.
Michael in Madison just said, you know, great lyrics still get written. Two examples, and here I dreamt that I was a soldier, and I marched in the streets of Birkenau. I marched the streets of Birkenau, and I recall in spring the perfume that the air would bring to the indolent town. That's from Here I Dreamt I Was an Architect, 2002, The Decemberists.
And, oh, I love
them. And Patti Smith even recorded that.
Oh, they're fantastic, that group. They're from the Northwest area where I lived. Very popular.
And then Jason Isbell.
Oh,
24 Frames. And, yeah, that line just wow. You thought God was an architect. Now, you know, he's something like a pipe bomb ready to blow. And everything you built that's all for show goes up in flames in 24 frames. First time I heard that, I got chills, and I still get chills from it. I'm not trying to suggest it's not being written anymore. I think I qualified earlier by saying you ain't gonna hear it on for-profit over-the-air terrestrial radio. My complaint is that it's harder to find.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a geezer question. Can I trust Rolling Stone?
No.
So what? Where do I go?
There's nowhere to go. That's the problem now. Everything is taken over. There is no underground. There is no, there's nothing.
Yeah, the
anymore.
Underground has been taken over.
Nobody could do that.
No, it's all for profit, yeah.
I mean, there used to be, you know, you'd get some decent music writing in Rolling Stone, and then Spin came along, and you'd get from time to time you'd get some good rolling good music writing out of Playboy, which has now gotten rid of the centerfolds, and it's kind of like the writing is still Playboy quality, and kind of like GQ, I guess. And by the way, Factory Girl was off Beggar's Banquet, as Asa reminds me.
I love that album.
Yeah.
I love Phil Oakes. Phil Oakes. And Phil Oakes is unbelievable. You know? He makes me cry.
I still think there's some good music, some the 90s music, the grunge scene. I liked it. And then after that, I kind of lose it, you know, as far as interest in music. I don't know if that's because I downloaded so much stuff in my head that I don't really have any more space to develop or appreciate music.
Well, I mean, I know what happened to me.
What?
What?
And I mean, I'm not being mean when I say this. My family happened to me.
You had other things to do.
And I mean, my weekly trip to buy new music budget became the diaper budget and the baby food budget. And a couple of years go by, and you go, "Well, I think I'll just go listen to what I was listening to before."
Well, I mean, Bob, I've got like 18 days of music on my computer. I mean, it would take 18 days straight to listen to what I have downloaded to, you know, to get to the beginning again. And some of that I probably wouldn't really care for, you know, it wouldn't be my favorite. But, I mean, I could go through it. I mean, as opposed to listening to the radio, the top, quote-unquote, 40, whatever version they have now, why listen to it if you don't have to? It's just like also you have the choice of Sirius, you know, Sirius satellite radio, XM. I mean, there they program it for you pretty much, and then they even offer a little, if you like grunge music, then you can get Grunge Plus, which I'm sure is like another $2 or $3 charge. And I like grunge, but not that much. You know, every $2 or $3 starts to happen.
Well, and the other thing that comes along with this that Michael just mentioned. Subject line, album formats. Vinyl albums are great. I still buy all my music on vinyl whenever possible, but I can't listen to a vinyl LP in my car or at work or while going for a walk. Vinyl's only good when you're at home unless you work in a record store. So that's my bit of apologism for CDs and digital music. And that's also, in many ways, the frontier of listening to music because, you know, every one of the, whether it's Pandora or Google or God knows, poor old Apple. Apple, and it just seems like Apple is in many ways becoming sort of moribund because Apple Radio blows. But they're all using different proprietary algorithms that just compress everything, and you lose so much in the compression. And so the technological challenge, at least what little bit of reading I was doing on it a few months back, you know, the challenge is to find a lossless format that somehow doesn't, you know, you don't lose half a hard drive just trying to put the Pink Floyd discography on your computer or more importantly, on your portable device. I mean,
it sounds like you're channeling Bob Abouli, but do you really think there's that much better quality on the LP, the old LPs, and there are still stores that still sell them? I haven't seen them. I assume there are.
Oh, no, vinyl's huge. Vinyl started a renaissance several years back, and any artist that is deemed to really care about their music issues on vinyl as well as CD and digital. And then digitally, you know, they always offer or almost always offer on the FLAC format, you know, the free lossless audio codec. Because, yeah, there's even been, John Fox turned me onto this. Some psychologist in conjunction with some musician did a study, you know, control groups, all of that, and they identified what they call the head bobbing factor. You can play the same song on an MP3 and on vinyl to some to people, and they won't bob their heads or tap their feet to the MP3. But you play it to them on vinyl, and it's an entirely different experience. But yeah, it's not just the vinyl. It's the turntable, the quality of the turntable. You know, Richard, who was in San Francisco and is now somewhere in Tennessee, is an expert on styly. And then of course it's the amp and it's the speaker. But a whole lot of that audiophilia has largely gone out the window because and it's kind of like car audio decades ago. The first computer speakers, I'm absolutely convinced, were salvaged from old Ford Pintos because they sound about the same.
Yeah, well, no, I can remember. I remember the thing about vinyl. I can remember going to this record store called General Store, and then right around the time I turned 15 or 16, it turned into Peaches, and all of a sudden the music selection got kind of crappy. But, you know, it became
corporate. Oh, my God, I remember Peaches.
Yeah, they were totally corporate.
I remember Peaches and Record Bar. Remember Record Bar?
Yeah. And I remember when they used to have, like, the head chopped in it. The good old days.
Anybody want to hear about my Air Force stereo system?
Do please.
Okay, to begin with, I had a Sansui 7000 amplifier and a Sansui rear amplifier. I had a TAC 2340R 4-channel reel-to-reel tape deck, and then 4 Acoustic Research AR2AX speakers. I spent a grand total of $1,455 on it when I was in the Air Force.
And bought it overseas, of course.
Yeah, basically, the Army Air Force catalog. And the basic scenes, I went in and I put the reel-to-reel. I bought the reel-to-reel in Thailand. And the rest of my stereo equipment, I bought in Okinawa.
And the reel-to-reel was a TAC?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were great.
Over in Thailand, we had 8-man cubicles set up, and we had one locker just for the main components of the stereo system, and then we had lockers that were all set apart that had speakers in them that were all, everything was lockable. But we had the main locker, we opened it up, we had 2 4-channel reel-to-reels and a turntable there, recording through 1 amp, so we could transfer all the vinyl we get from people in the barracks onto the reel-to-reel.
Oh, there! I knew people that had entire rooms. All 4 walls were 15-inch, quarter-inch, 15-inch diameter reel-to-reel, quarter-inch tape.
Oh, I remember having huge speakers about 18 inches high, you know, and 12 inches long, wide. You know,
no, these are big box speakers.
We keep this shit up much longer. Somebody's going to bring us all applesauce. You realize that, right?
I don't know about that. My other story about radio, old-time radio, in my ear, before I went in the Air Force, I used to listen to Wolfman Jack at night when I was working at a gas station on Interstate 5. All night gas station. That's all there was gas stations. There was no McDonald's, no Burger Kings, no food marts. It was just gas stations right here in Little Old Red Bluff. And I'd sit between the pumps and blast this radio. You could hear it all through the service station. You know, we had a lift hoist and all that, you know, so you could work on cars and stuff. I'd blast Wolfman Jack 4 or 5 in the morning from the XERB, Mexico radio station.
If you want a treat, speaking of Wolfman, about 6 months or so before he died, back in the, I guess, the mid to late 90s, he wrote a biography, autobiography, called Have Mercy. And if you want a treat, you can probably get it from Amazon for a couple of bucks, maybe even less. It is a great retelling of his career in radio, how he got into it, You know,
can probably buy it on the website, too. There's a Wolfman Jack website.
Well, yeah, it probably is. But the funniest thing...
There is. I know. I searched it out years ago.
The funniest thing in the book, one of the funniest things, was when he was living with relatives in the D.C. area, and he was. It was before he went to radio school. He was selling either encyclopedias or brushes door to door, and he recounted a couple of interesting incidents in the D.C. suburbs, knocking on the door of a suburban housewife, trying to sell her encyclopedias or brushes or whatever it was. But and he told the story as only Wolfman could. And I don't know where the groupies are better, door-to-door sales of that era or radio, but I'm sure I'm sure he's had some of each in both venues.
Now, I tell you, speaking of Wolfman Jack, something I'd love to get my hands on, and I know it's out there, the Midnight Special, all the DVDs.
Well, that's on TV. I've seen it advertised.
It's one of those Time Life things, and I'm just sort of constitutionally opposed.
I totally agree, but I don't know how else you're going to get it.
Exactly. But now, something else. Is there a complete collection out there of Don Kirshner's rock concert?
I'm sure there is. See, I mean, the thing about that for me is a lot of most of that music, and I can remember what was it, Midnight Special concert, and I burnt out on that real early. It just didn't seem to have the bands I liked. I guess I've just been...
Well, but again, you know, that's possible. I mean, people like you and Alex were living in places where music was a hell of a lot more accessible. For where I grew up, you know, you'd sit there and, you know, put toothpicks between your eyelids just trying to stay awake just to, you know, see, hear. Because... And like I said, the irony was that you had every great rock and roll act under the sun coming through Muscle Shoals, and none of it got played on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I remember, I think it was like I still remember the call. It was WTIX, was the mighty 690 AM station. I was listening to my early teens, and then like around 14, I discovered FM, and there was a WIXO, and that faded away. There was WRNO, and then like around the time I was 17, I discovered WTUL, the college radio station. You know, and I ended up knowing one of the meeting, you know, hanging out with some of the DJs. I knew some of the DJs there, which is, you know, way cool. But I mean, and the music was much better, plus it was non-commercial. That's why I'm addicted to your show. One reason, besides the enlightening dialogue.
Well,
Jim?
Thank you for the enlightening dialogue.
Jim, you mentioned WRNO. Back in the 80s, the owner of the station, a guy named Joe Costello, who I think has gone up to that big broadcast booth in the sky, decided he wanted to start a commercial shortwave station. And basically, it was religious. He'd sell time in half-hour and 15-minute blocks to religious radio programs. But I hooked up with a group out of Illinois called Radio Earth International. And 7 nights a week, they did a one-hour magazine show. And one of the segments was one that I did called The Jazz Connection. And basically, they would buy an hour a night on WRNO, and you could hear it, if you had a shortwave radio, you could hear it anywhere in North America. And then they hooked up with a signal in Milan, Italy, called, I think, Radio Milano, I think was the name of it. And I would get, like, fan mail from jazz fans from the Northern Hemisphere. You know, anybody who was listening and happened upon my little segment, they would send, you know, cards and letters and stuff. But for music, shortwave radio is definitely not the technology that you want because of the haphazard nature of the signal. But not too long ago, they came up with something called digital shortwave, which is like FM, comparable to FM stereo, but has the reach of a shortwave signal. And I've never heard what that sounds like, but if it works as advertised, I imagine that's pretty impressive in terms of reach. But yeah, when you mentioned WRNO, it reminded me of those days back in the 80s. I would produce the show in Kansas City, send the tape to Evanston, Illinois, I think it was. They would incorporate my segment into the show and then ship the tape down to New Orleans or thereabouts so that it could be played on the shortwave station. Really an antiquated system, but back in those days, that's all we had.
Bob, I've got a question for everybody. Does everybody remember that the first concert? I mean, I remember mine. Mine was like Alice Cooper, Welcome to My Nightmare.
Allman Brothers.
Yeah, see, this is where it gets embarrassing. Everybody, okay, so Alice Cooper, Allman Brothers, keep going. You know, Alex, tell me it was Lou Reed, okay? Just say Lou Reed, and we'll go next. Alex,
it was Alice Cooper.
No, I was talking to Alex, you know, because she was in New York. I said, yeah, it was probably...
Oh, okay.
She must step away.
I think she's probably out making a cocktail.
My first concert was not music. It was on April 1st, 1973, George Carlin doing his show at a place on the outskirts of D.C. called the Shady Grove Music Fair in the Round.
Wow.
But one of my earliest live music performances was the warm-up act was a comedian called Gabriel Kaplan, who people might remember from Welcome Back, Kotter, the situation comedy. This was at a nightclub in Georgetown, part of D.C., called the Cellar Door. And the musical act was Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. If you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show.
Oh, of course.
With,
I just posted a video. They're awesome, man. Shel Silverstein, who wrote for Playboy, actually was a great songwriter for them.
Yeah, Freakers.
It all ties together.
Freaker's Ball.
Oh, he wrote that. He wrote Sylvia's
I got a
mother.
Freaky old lady named Cocaine Katie who embroideries on my jeans.
He also wrote Penicillin Penny. I mean, all those songs are just classic, man.
I don't know about the Shel Silverstein writing Sylvia's mother. I've got a friend of mine has a studio up in Vermont that has a gold record hanging on the wall with his Grammy sitting next to it for having written that one. His name is Bobby Gosh.
I could send you a link where Shel wrote that thing.
Well,
I'm not
maybe they co-wrote it, but I didn't see any co on the awards. He's got his paid for his studio, paid for 200 acres in Vermont at a 24-track studio in his basement.
Okay, here's That's some obscure, given that Shel Silverstein just got brought up. Anybody remember The Smokeout?
The what?
The Smokeout by Shel Silverstein.
Nah.
Oh, you want to talk? You want to talk about subversive? It's a song about a joint rolling competition at Yankee Stadium. And
well, what back in the '60s or?
Well, no, I mean it didn't really happen. It's Shel Silverstein. You know, it's just, you know, it's what he did. I mean. In the laid-back California town of sunny San Rafael lived a girl named Pearlie Sweetcakes. You probably knew her well. She'd been stoned 21 of her 24 years, and her story was widely told, how she could smoke 'em faster than any dude could roll. While off in New York City, on a Grove Street walk-up flat, there dwelt the Calistoga Kid, a beatnik from the past. He'd been rolling dope since time began, and he took a cultured tote and said, "Kid, I can roll 'em faster than any chick can smoke." And it goes from there. Yes, I memorized it. Because it was so, you want obscure? Here's obscure. I used to get, I started out as a little baby DJ in a gospel radio station in Northwest Alabama that had previously, once upon a time, been a kick-ass rock and roll radio station before the Christians bought it to shut down the rock and roll. I mean, I really did grow up in sort of an analog to the town in Footloose. Okay, it is the absolute damn truth that I went to a high school where dancing was forbidden because the principal was a member of the Church of Christ. I've told this before. No,
you're not shitting.
No, I'm not shitting you.
You never had high school dances?
Fuck no.
Oh, for Christ's sake, we had them after every football game.
No proms.
Home football game. High school dance.
No, because that was sinful in the eyes of the Church of Christ. And so the rock and roll station had been turned into a gospel Southern quartet radio station. And some of the thing is, the record companies were still sending rock and roll records to the station. So if you could get there at the right time and nobody was watching, you could get those, you could get those promo copies and carry them home. And I got hold of a promo copy of Shel Silverstein, and it was, I guess, new out at the time, Shel Silverstein, The Smoke Off. And it was like nothing I had ever heard in my life.
Subversive.
Shel was awesome. He really was.
Okay, now you got. I can't. Steve, come on.
Oh, I got on the request line from Rick. I got a request.
Yeah.
Something to get him jacked up for a Cubs victory tonight. He says.
Yeah.
Willin' by Little Feet.
Let it roll. Waiting on Columbus. What a great album.
Waiting for Columbus, not waiting on.
Yeah,
waiting for.
Yeah, okay, Bob. All right. Well, you got me on a word. Okay.
Guys,
I got you on the great smoke-off, too, Bub.
1970, I think it was 78 or 77.
Stump the
chump, huh? Keith Moon died. That was the year Keith Moon died. Lowell George died. Keith Moon died. And there was somebody else that died at the same time. Do you remember? Keith Moon, Lowell George.
What year was this?
77 or 78. There were three. Keith Moon died. Lowell George died, and one more.
Yeah, and I remember Keith Moon was on the cover of the. He was the only one, but it was like some sort of supposedly symbolic thing about the.
It wasn't Morris Center Joplin. That was way before that. So.
No, this is 77, 78. So Lowell George died the same year Keith Moon died. Oh, was it Leonard Skinner? No.
That might be about right, yeah. Yeah. Ronnie Van Zant?
Yeah, I think that's the year that all that, 77, 78, something like that.
Yeah, because their previous album, the album next previous to The Crash, had them all on fire.
Right, and they removed the flames.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the Street Survivors album.
Right. Yep.
Okay, so nobody ever heard this, so stand by, all right? I got Shel Silverstein queued up here.
Now in the laid-back California town of sunny San Rafael lived a girl named Pearlie Sweetcake. You probably knew her well. She was stoned 15 of her 18 years, and her story was widely told that she could smoke 'em faster than anyone could roll. Well, her legend finally reached New York, that Grove Street walk-up flat, where dwelt the Calistoga Kid, a beatnik from the past. He'd been rolling dope since time began. Now he took a cultured toke and said, Jim, I can roll them faster than any chick can smoke. So a note gets sent to San Rafael for the championship of the world. The kid demands a smoke-off. Well, bring him on, says Pearl. I grind his fingers off his hands. He'll roll until he drops. Says Calistoga, I'll smoke that chick till she blows up and pops. So they rent out Yankee Stadium, and the word is quickly spread. Come one, come all, who walk or crawl, tickets just 2 lids ahead. And from...
Time out. There's a...
That's awesome.
There's a... No, but there's a vocabulary word for the modern age. Tickets just 2 lids ahead.
Yeah, who knows what a lid is? Raise your hand.
What was that, 2 lids?
I plead the fifth.
Was it a two-finger lid?
Whoa. No, a lid was 2 dimes and a nickel, wasn't it?
No, a lid was $10.
No, it was...
4 fingers, $2.
$10 a bag back in the day. It had to be 2 fingers.
Fifth, yeah.
Remember Sensamelia? Sensamelia?
Yeah, that changed everything.
Or Mohawkan lime green mesh pecan.
That took him from $10 to $40. But again, I'm going to plead the fifth, you know, so I'm out.
Too late.
Then weed went up to 35 an ounce, and then...
Yes, it went from 10 to 35 to 40, and I don't even know where it's at now.
A lid.
I quit smoking in 99, so I don't know where it's at now.
A lid, one ounce.
Yeah. Unless you were in Thailand and it was $1.50 for a bottle, give it to Papa Son for a brick.
Okay, so you mentioned Oaxacan tops. Hang on just a minute.
Every town and hamlet, over land and sea they speed, the world's greatest dopers with the world's greatest weed. Hashishers from Morocco, hemp smokers from Peru, and the shashniks from Bagun who smoke the deadly pugaru, and those who call it light of life, and those that call it boo. See the dealers and their ladies wearing turquoise, lace, and leather. See the narcos and the closet smokers puffing all together. From the teenies who smoke legal to the ones who've done some time to the old man who smoked reefer back before it was a crime. And the grand old house that Ruth built is filled with the smokes and cries of 50,000 screaming heads all stoned out of their minds. And they play the national anthem, and the crowd lets out a roar as the spotlight hits the Kid and Pearl, ready for their smoking war. At a table piled up high with grass, as high as a mountain peak, just tops and buds of the rarest flowers, not one stem, branch, or seed. I mean a Maui, Wowie, a Panama Red, Acapulco Gold, teeth from East Afghanistan, and that rare Alaska Cold. And there's sticks from Thailand, games from the island, and Bangkok's blooming best, and some of that wet imported shit that capsized off Key West. There's Oaxacan tops, and Kenya Bang, and Riviera Floors, and that rare Manhattan Silver that grows down the New York sewers. And there's bubbling ice cold lemonade, and sweet grapes by the bunches, and there's Hershey bars and Oreos in case anybody gets the munches. And the Calistoga Kid, he smiles, and Pearlie, she just grins, and the drums roll low, and the crowd yells, go, go, go! And the world's first smoke-off begins.
I had to get that far so you could hear the reference to the Oaxacan
tops. Bob. Holy gosh, where did you get that, man?
Well, I mean, I just pulled it up off of, off of YouTube. But once upon a time, I mean, you could. I mean, it was subversive. Like I said, I snuck it out of the gospel voice of Northwest Alabama in the dark and still of the night.
Well, you know, before, Shell wrote children's books. You know that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh no, no, my children. I think one of the first books my kids ever got read to them was The Giving Tree.
And he also contributed a lot to Dr. Hook and the Medicine Show. One of my favorite songs is Carry Me Carry that he wrote, you know. And it's off their greatest hits if anybody's interested.
And by the way, just a little update. I'm told that the signal has been lost. And I don't know why.
I'm not lost.
Randy in PA told me the horn stream disappeared. Sylvia told me the horn stream disappeared.
I could go check it out, Bob, if you want.
Well, it's off on head on.
Enough.
Yeah, the whole chat has been lit up with it, saying it's
yeah.
off.
Yeah,
404 error.
And the funny thing, I guess Agent Fred doesn't like rock and roll talk, and Agent Fred really doesn't like Shel Silverstein.
Well, ain't that a kick in the head?
So that probably means the server's crashed on Ben's end.
Yeah, and I'm not going to bother him because this is Ben's birthday.
Yeah.
And A, he's probably not home, and I'm not going to give him a headache on his birthday. So, you know, my apologies in that regard. But for folks listening, you know, in delay to the podcast, I'll just say that we've still got $300 to raise this evening, and one more slot remains, courtesy of Harold, Chairman and President and CEO, Chief Cook and Bottle Washer of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. One slot remains in the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, 671% roundup. Is it 671? You know,
and
me and Matt.
Speaking of Harold.
Just a minute. Let me see here. Got to go back a ways for a minute here. Okay. We'll get there. There it is. The 641% roundup. So the next person who subscribes for $10 a month to the horn at the website under headonradionetwork.com/contribute. Well, your first month's contribution gets rounded up by 641%, and that is a tremendous. Offer on the part of Harold and the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, Sachtris. And I should say, no, we're down to $200 to go fundraising for this evening, because we've already got, courtesy of Melton, one taker of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society Roundup, 641% Roundup event. In addition, the Wild Rice offer remains on the table. I had a note from Jen in Australia saying, I would have loved a couple of pounds of the wild rice, but the paranoid Australian customs officers would place such a parcel in a barrel of fungicide and then irradiate it for a month, even if they allowed me to have it at all. I appreciate their need for caution, but we regularly deal with them. Example, plants we import are quarantined for 3 months and soaked in copper, all to eradicate a snail species that was introduced by the government and became naturalized in the 1930s. Grr! LOL, you gotta laugh, or else, you know, you wind up crying all the time. So, there's that. Daggummit, I guess.
Harold has joined us.
Oh, are you there, Harold?
I'm here.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Oh, you dropped the internets on me, and I couldn't listen anymore, so I thought, well, I'll just join the conversation.
Well, I'm awfully glad you did, and thank you very kindly. I mean, it's not every day we have the chairman and CEO, chief cook and bottle washer of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society join us on the front
porch. Salutations.
And greetings and hallucinations to you. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I'm just sitting here kind of at my wit's end trying to figure out what happened to the stream. Let's see. I don't know.
It started as dropping off once in a while, and then it dropped altogether.
And the funny thing is, I never saw the first bit of buffering. Not even a little bit. I mean, if it was on my end, I would have, you know, seen it.
Good. Don't know.
I just looked back behind the monitor, which is where the routers live, and no, they're both golden. I wish I had an answer.
There's some way to do this weekend.
I turned on my internet radio. I got the 404 error signal. That usually means that the stream has dropped out, like I said, on Ben's end.
Right.
Bob, can I ask you a question? This doesn't happen too much in Europe because they have much better Wi-Fi and stuff and everything. Is that correct? I've heard that.
It doesn't happen much anywhere else in the civilized world either, but we invented the internet, but then we turned it over to the capitalists.
God, I hate capitalism, Bob. I mean, it could be, you know, democratic socialism would be the only way it can survive. I don't see how they can't see that. And I guess, what do they think? They're going to be able to squeeze up enough, and I hate to get off the vibe we had with music, but I mean, this is a case where we're talking music, and then basically the fee goes down for whatever reason, and it's because they want to give you the cheapest product, or what they'll do, they'll offer you if you want it extra good, there's another $10 or $15 a month. Sometimes people don't have another $10 or $15 a month, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and it's... Look, there's so many different ways they're getting around net neutrality. The cable provider that's available here, Shentel, which is Shenandoah Telephone and Telegraph. If you just get consumer internet from them now, it's metered. You only get it's metered. You only get so many gigs per month on a cable modem, you know, just like as if it was a cell phone. And then once you go over, they bill the living daylights out of you. Just like cell phone wireless. And it's nothing, but it's just pure greed because they haven't put in sufficient infrastructure to handle the load that they were selling in the first place.
Yeah, they'll get around to it. You know, I mean, it's like that all over. But it's just infuriating, you know. What's he going to do, you know? It is weird.
Put him out of there. Get somebody in Congress that'll give us internet.
Well, there you go. I forget who it was. Maybe it was Lottie a while back said we ought to turn the internet over to the post office. So that they can.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Well, yeah. If we could get a Congress that would get off the postal services back.
Well, they want to privatize that.
Yeah. I just saw a report. Agnes directed my attention to it. West Virginia has, I think, the lowest rate in the nation of access to 3 megabyte bandwidth. I mean, 3. Okay, that's 3 down.
You're not on 4 yet?
No, well, I mean, my service, and we have to actually have multiple lines coming in here. That's why it's so damned expensive. We've got multiple lines coming in here, and each line is 10 down, 1 up. And it's pitiful. Now, on the other hand, the cell phone internet that I've got, it's crazy. It's like 40 down and 20 up. But if I was to use it to run the horn, the internet bill would be north of $1,000 a month just for internet. It's crazy.
Ridiculous.
I get 100 down and 3 up.
Yeah, see, three up is almost unimaginably fast to me. For instance, when I close the program out, I often say in the chat room and over here in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, I say, you know, got to sign out because I got to do the upload. And when I do the upload, the rerun stream buffers all to hell. But the upload for my one lonesome little three-hour program, the upload when I put it up to White Rose and to Podbean, the White Rose upload takes 20 minutes, and the Podbean upload takes 20 minutes.
Separately?
Separate.
40 minutes?
Yeah. And that's just me sitting here for 40 minutes.
Bob, I meant to ask you, what kind of speed do you have, or what do you have to have to administer a radio show? It's got to be.
Well, I'm not running the server, so I don't have to have a big pipe. That's what Ben does. I send one, and this is, you know, this is really the hallmark of shitty internet. I send one 64 kbps, two channel stream up to the White Rose server. 64 miserable kbps. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And half the time when I come, I'll start the stream running after all the uploads are done, so there shouldn't be any buffering, and I'll start the stream and go to bed, get up the next morning, and come in, and it'll be buffered up. Or, you know, I'll go to the store and come back, and it'll be buffered up. They cannot even provide me a stable 64 kbps.
64, that's just a touch above dial-up, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're not even sending it CD quality. We're sending it, CD quality is 128.
Yeah, that's it. 64 is the, 58.8 was the theoretical on when they provision phone circuits, 64K is per line. That's what they figure is a voice quality line, is 64K. And that's where the 58.8 modems came from, because they needed room for buffering. But that's where that all came from. Son of phone guy here, and then work in internet for the last 40 years. So that's a little internet history for you.
Yeah, and if you were a phone guy, Scott.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So if I was 2 miles down the road in so-called in town, I could probably get 3 up and closer to 36 down.
Yeah, you're closer to the switch.
Yeah, if I'm within 1,000 feet of the CO.
Right. Well, then they can put in, if you've got enough demand, they can put in another, they can put in a repeater.
Well, Bob, let me ask you this. Are you there, friend?
Oh, I am.
If everybody within the sound of my voice, either on the podcast or whenever, was to petition Progressive Voices and get you out there on their network, would that help you at all?
Well, it can't hurt. I mean, if everybody listening to this... way, go ahead, Harold.
It'd probably be the same way with Malloy. They'd want a $20,000 donation.
I don't know the particulars of their... of their
God
business
damn,
model.
That high? I mean, I could go a small chunk of that, but nothing near that, you know? Jesus.
Well, that's what it was.
I think they play David Pakman when you're on.
Oh, they play all kinds of stuff.
I think it's Leslie Marshall.
Well, it was Leslie for a while. It's David Pakman. Yeah. They got all kinds of... They got Michelle Meow somewhere in this slot. I think they dropped Brad Friedman's rerun somewhere in this slot.
Unless I hit the lottery, 20K is way out of my price range, man. I can't even do one-tenth of that.
Well, I could probably do it if I didn't have the Gulfstream 5 payment and the Maybach payment and Agnes's masseur and the pool professional.
And the Lamborghini payment, yeah.
Lamborghini my ass. I'm a Porsche man, damn it.
What, you don't have the pair of Bayliners?
Well, I mean, we don't really have the water for it.
progressive voices, you don't have to have a no. Nicole Sandler is got on is on there, and she didn't have to have a big donation. She just well, she kind of rode Randy Rhoads' tail feathers on too, but that's a big part of it, I guess. But maybe, I don't know, but I think she proved herself too. She was on the weekends for a while, and she, you know, had been waiting for a slot, and so they had put her slotted in behind Randy Rhoads there because they were working together. So you know, I don't think it's so much that you need to have a big donation. So
well, Nicole may have come as a package deal with Randy. I don't know the particulars.
But my God, yeah. Bob's been doing this for 20 years. He's paid his dues. I mean,
oh no, not 20. Just 12 plus.
Well, since the terrestrial days, I know I've been listening to you for a long time. Yeah. It's time.
It would be nice. I mean, we've got. I'd probably see. Back when we had the equipment fund thing. The gizmo that gets to that sends it's I use the gizmo to send the signal to them, and you've got to have another gizmo on the other end. So there would probably be another gizmo, and that's $2,000.
So how long have you been in the radio business, Bob?
Two, three years in high school, worked during college, worked during law school. 2 years
give
at
me
CNN,
a total.
Huh?
Give me a total.
I
years. Figured it
out. Yeah, it's around 20
years. You can't do math.
Yeah, I can't do math.
Yeah,
thank you.
Can't do math on the fly.
Call it, yeah, but around 20 years.
That's what I said. Around 20 years, and you said no.
Oh, I was just and thinking. I was just thinking about the horn.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And gizmos.
Bob, I got an idea
somebody
for a radio show for
you. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, WV Law.
No.
Or WV Law and Order, you know, combined Law and Order. And
oh, the dum-dum. Yeah, but I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on the radio. So, oh, hey, I just got a note from Michael in Madison saying after about 30 minutes I got the stream back via TuneIn. Sounds like a lower bit rate than usual, but listenable. So, hooray.
9 minutes left.
Yeah, with 9 minutes left.
Hey, right. Excellent.
But to answer the initial question, Steve, if there were thousands and thousands and thousands of people writing to Progressive Voices saying, you know, why aren't you carrying one of the yada 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 preeminent awesome, my God, you know, everybody, you know, et cetera, et cetera, you know, Bob. You know, that probably has an impact because that's a listenership wanting something.
Well, you're an international treasure. I mean, it's ridiculous that you're not on Progressive.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me holler for Agnes to bring the C-clamp to put on my head.
Well, yeah, and I'm not being patronizing either. That's from the heart, you know.
And I appreciate that. I really, really do because... The only point to even doing this is to create the dialogue and to create the community space, because you know we don't have any baldness cure herbal remedy erection medicine to sell.
And I'm saying crystals or none of that, huh?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, I'm not completely averse to it, but I like what we're doing here.
No, you're right, Bob, because it was weird. I'm going back when I was growing up and stuff, and you grow up and all you know is commercial TV except for a little PBS stuff and then commercial radio. It's not till, you know, I ran into, you know, basically your show through the internet. Yeah, it kind of opens your eyes. I mean, Malloy's show did too a little bit, but he wasn't, I mean, he just, you know, he was on Sirius, you know. A pay thing, but yours is, you know, free on the internet. And I know there's other people on the internet.
Well, and that's, you know, that too, as I've said before, that too is part of the model. Jim. I don't want anybody to have to pay to participate in the conversation. And by participate, sometimes that just means listening.
And I can remember.
I noticed that Tom Hartman on his show, and I don't have listened to him in a while, but it would be, and I understand why he did it, but whereas you'll let people talk 20, 30, 40 minutes, even longer, he kind of limits it to like a 2-minute question, if you can get that, you know. I understand why he does that, but it's a totally different format.
Well, there's there's commercials to be run, and there's a lot of stuff that goes into that, and it's because of that model that we created conversation radio.
Well, I can remember when Malloy went head to head with Neil Bortz on WSB terrestrial radio
and whipped his ass.
Yes, way back when, because we had a what, Bob? A fairness doctrine, and I know you're against it, but that's why they had to do it, you know. And
well, it was also commercially viable too. Exactly. See, that's before, you know, that's before because see what happened is if you have, and this is just boring inside baseball, if you have a progressive host and a wingnut host and they are on, and say they're both on a 50,000 watt clear channel, the progressive host will whip the ass of the conservative host almost consistently, all the time, in the books, okay? And that was intolerable to the right-wing think tanks and foundations and funders and sugar daddies and billionaires who were funding the right-wing radio in the first place. And so, because they cannot play fair, they started an effort to smear people off of the radio. Progressive people. There used to be progressive... I was program director of a little AM radio station in Alabama at a time when we carried what was then called ABC Talk Radio, and it was mostly progressive. There was a great progressive host by the name of Michael Jackson out of L.A., and, you know, he had this urbane, sophisticated sort of British accent. I don't know if it was British or South African or Australian or what, but... you know, I could almost, it was, his accent was so fucking clipped, I could hear his mustache on his lip. And he was great. And then gone. And the next thing you know, there's Rush Limbaugh. Because see, you had to pay for ABC Talk Radio, but a crummy little AM station in Northwest Alabama could get Rush Limbaugh for free just for running his ads for, you know, Snapple or Florida orange juice. See how it works? And so the next thing you know, there's no progressive radio to be found.
Well, then all the corporations started buying up all of the
and then you get
the watch stations.
Right, then you get the telecommunication. Then you get right. Then you get the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Station ownership consolidates, and goodbye. You know, goodbye progressive radio.
Right, and it's all programmed somewhere in Idaho and sent out over the internet.
Yeah, that's the Christian stuff comes from Idaho, exactly.
Salem.
They all have they're all produced in the same studios and it's sent out over the net and everybody has it all.
Right, and Clear Channel used to Clear Channel used to come out of North Carolina, I think.
Yeah, it was originally. Yeah. It was, because I remember when some of the stations got bought that I was working with.
But then, you know, along comes like Air America and completely screws the idea up for the entire genre, because they were running around out there hemorrhaging money because they were leasing leasing stations instead of going out there and finding and taking the billionaire money and buying them.
Yeah, I think it was kind of planned.
Channel thing was a mess.
Because that's what you've got to have, is you've got to have station ownership. Because
that's iHeartRadio.
Yeah, now they're iHeartRadio because the word Clear Channel is toxic. But you've got to have station ownership so that you've got a minor league. You've got to have places for little pimply faced kids who don't want to flip burgers to take a minimum wage job. What was back then spinning records, now is, you know, firing computer files. Although, you know, the coolest radio is still you know, stylus on vinyl, and there is some of it. I used to talk about wanting to do a weekend program here with a couple of turntables and a whole bunch of vinyl and work out a deal with the place that carries vinyl over in Beckley and just call it Real Vinyl Radio.
That would be awesome.
And have it be one of those psychotic no-format formats.
Well, you still just have all your vinyl records?
Just rock it out. That would be awesome.
But
Pirate Radio.
But you've got to have station ownership on a terrestrial basis to do that.
Right.
And it's a lot more important to own... I mean, yeah, okay, it's great to own the biggest station in the biggest city in the state or in the capital city or whatever. But if you could get a couple of billionaires together who would go out and buy, the little local AM-FM combo in Busted Knuckle, and you make a habit of that, and then you program it with progressive programming, you can win that way, too.
Wait a minute, Bob. Is that George Soros trying to get through?
No.
Yeah, he's calling. Ring, ring.
It's time.
Yeah, it is. It's time. Got to clear out of here. We've got $200 in fundraising to go. One slot open. Thank you very kindly. I've never gotten to thank you on air, Harold. Thank you very kindly for the 641% roundup for the next $10 a month subscriber, courtesy of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society. And I finally got to where I can say that without tripping over my own tongue. Aren't we all proud of me?
I'm proud of you.
Good job, Bob.
As a professional broadcaster.
We'll keep fighting the good fight, brother. I'm with you.
Well, I appreciate it. And I thank you,
Bob.
Thank you, Sparky, for running the whole show once again. Thank you, Jim, for dialing in from Louisiana, Stan. Thanks, Alex, wherever you may be. Thank you, Jules. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Scott and Scott. Thanks, Harold. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Snork. And thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. You are the reason that it exists. You really, really are. And, of course, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a great weekend. Back for more and Monday.